Hello and welcome to Macintosh and Maud Haven't Seen What? The podcast where Macintosh and Maud force each other to watch movies they should have already seen.
I'm David, a.k.a. Macintosh.
And I'm Diana, a.k.a. Maud. What are we watching this week? Trading Places, 1983. A snobbish investor and a Willie Street con artist find their positions reversed as part of a bet by two callous millionaires. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Okay, is it 1983? I'm looking at the money here.
No, we can find it later. How did you see this movie?
I grew up on this film. It was one of the ones that my mom had recorded off TV, so I watched the edited version. So there are a lot more boobs in this movie than I ever knew about, and a lot of F-bombs.
It's an R movie.
Yeah, it definitely is. It was just one of those movies that was on a continuous loop. It was this, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Overboard, and there was one other one.
Bloodsport?
No, that was just a movie my brother rented all the time.
Nah.
So me and my brother would watch this all the time. My brother could do a pretty good Eddie Murphy impersonation, and so we repeated a lot of things from this movie. And I remember growing up thinking that the two Mortimer brothers always remind me of Statler and Waldorf from The Muppets.
Nah.
They kind of look like them, and they certainly act like them.
I don't have a good excuse for not seeing this movie even on Comedy Central, because mm-hmm. It was on constantly. I also don't have a good excuse because it's John Landis, whose other movies I thoroughly enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Blues Brothers, Animal House, Kentucky Fried Movie. I even like Spies Like Us.
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
Three Amigos.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, the Thriller video. He was mm-hmm. huge with Michael Jackson. The Stupids, which is a secret hate-love movie of mine. I know it's terrible, but I love it.
Oh, wow. I don't know how to feel about that one.
Yeah,
you really don't have an excuse, because it's definitely a rerun movie. They still show it.
I will say this, that those F-bombs and different things there, mm-hmm. they are so superfluous at times.
Yeah.
As to be easy to cut out for cable.
Oh.
This is a perfect cable movie.
Oh, yes. The difference for me, there it was just like, oh, I didn't realize that that was there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's all it is. And now I can remember not knowing to look for a cut F-bomb. Like, nowadays on TV, they'll actually have the F-bomb in the script, and when they air it, they'll drop the audio on it so you can't hear it. But then when you watch it on, say, Netflix or on their, you know, proprietary app, the F-bomb will be there.
Yeah.
We saw that happened with Mad Men a lot. You could see, like, oh, they just dropped the audio on that. And they did it a few times with Walking Dead. They didn't do it, I know, towards the end before we quit watching. They would do that. So yeah, the edited version does not take away anything from this film.
No.
So that is fine. Okay, so let's talk about the cast.
Okay.
First we have Eddie Murphy as Billy Ray Valentine.
This is him at his peak.
He's amazing.
Of course he's amazing.
He is the con artist who then gets turned into the wealthy gentleman.
I mean, it's a My Fair Lady with...
with, instead of one person being changed, there's two people who are switching roles.
Yeah.
And it's all for the entertainment of these two rich guys. And their bet is $1.
Yep.
Because they have so much money that it's arbitrary to bet any more than a dollar.
Of course.
Okay, what about Dan Aykroyd?
He's getting to play against his manic personality. Mm-hmm. Which is quite entertaining. Him playing a rich, uptight, white asshole is so much fun.
Oh, yeah, and he's not playing goofy at all.
There's a couple of times.
Well, okay.
He goes off the deep end at some point, which is why you got Dan Aykroyd to go off the deep end. But
true, but at least in the beginning when he's playing, you know, the yuppie.
He's playing a real yuppie.
Oh, yeah, which is totally against his type.
Yep.
It's so fun. Okay, then we have Ralph Bellamy as Randolph Duke.
And Donna Meachie as Mortimer Duke. Both old school 40s actors, 30s and 40s actors, mm-hmm. classic character guys, and you know, they're doing a solid job.
They're playing the crotchety old dudes.
Yeah.
They're doing a great job. What about Delholm Elliott, who played Coleman the butler?
Okay, do you know where you know him from, right?
I don't.
He's from Indiana Jones.
Oh, shit.
He's, what's his face? Brody from Indiana Jones, from the first movie in The Last Crusade, from Raiders, and yeah.
Damn.
Oh, yeah. That's the big deal for him, and a British character actor himself, but, like, that's the big thing for him is the little sidekick role with Indy.
Huh. That did not connect for me. Wow.
I knew that guy.
Okay.
Very much an 80s staple. A lot of these people are 80s staple character actors. They all just... a lot of these guys, like John Landis, had made and watched tons of movies, knew who all these people were and involved in them, and so they jumped in a major way to cast a lot of these old school character actors because they'd grown up on movies like that.
Okay, do you want to know a fun cameo?
For
one of the cellmates
is
Giancarlo Esposito, Gustav Fring himself from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
Is in prison with Eddie Murphy.
That is amazing. Okay, so what did you think about Jamie Lee Curtis as Ophelia?
This was her breakout big role, if I remember correctly. I know Halloween was a huge thing, but
when was Halloween? Was it before
78?
Okay.
But this was, if I remember correctly, this was the first major movie that she got lots of attention for.
Well, yeah, and she shows her boobs.
That's
gonna get you some attention.
You know, I'm seeing here, she was a horror queen up until then.
Yes.
And then right after the Halloween stuff, she jumps in. Yeah, Trading Places is her first big time, big budget
non-horror
type thing.
Film. Yeah.
And then that's kind of blew out there. I mean, I still, you know me, A Fish Called Wanda is still the perfect movie that she's in. I don't know that she's the best part of it, mm-hmm. but that's still...
No, the best part of that movie is Kevin Kline.
Of course. Which is why he won an Oscar.
Which is beyond rare because it's a comedy.
But... And True Lies.
Oh, I love True Lies. That's one of Schwarzenegger's best movies, too.
It's a dumb, dumb movie, but it is fun to watch.
It's also one of Tom Arnold's best films.
Mm-hmm. And Tom Arnold's a good actor.
Yeah.
He did way too many drugs, and now that he's sober, his acting has gotten a whole lot better, which is why he's getting to do more.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, and we have one more, like, super recognizable guy, Paul Gleason.
Yes.
Clarence Beeks. He's the insider info guy.
I cannot see his face and not think, you mess with the bull, you get the horns.
Oh, yeah.
You don't... It's always the Breakfast Club for him, but...
That man has not aged either.
He had not aged. He is deceased now.
Okay, that makes me feel bad.
But...
you know what I mean. All of his films, doesn't matter when they were done, whatever's role, he looks the same in all of
them.
Oh,
yeah, he was always the exact same person. And he was...
Oh, James Eckhouse.
This was bread and butter for him.
Oh, yeah.
Like...
I believe that.
Also, special shout-out to Frank Oz, Fozzie, and Yoda himself, who shows up as a kind of Weasley cop guy mm-hmm. there in the middle of the movie.
Well, so does James Eckhouse, who is the dad from 90210.
And Bo Diddley, the 50s, 60s blues guitar player as a pawn shop owner, who is quite entertaining. Oh, and, hey, there's lots of great little roles. Jim Belushi.
Oh, yes. Jim Belushi, who has a scene when they're on the train during the New Year's Eve party, they've got...
He's a drunken partygoer.
He's a drunken party guy.
Just leave it there.
And he's got the gorilla suit. And then, of course, Al Franken and Tom Davis as the baggage handlers.
Senator
from Minnesota, Al Franken.
I mean, this is comedy circles converging.
Well, this is a whole lot of SNL people being friends. I wasn't Chris. No, they weren't dating.
Landis was. I mean, Landis had done stuff with Kentucky Fried Movie and the mm-hmm. Zucker Brothers, and that looped in a whole bunch of people from Second City.
Oh yeah,
the Belushi. I mean, mm-hmm. That whole scene was very, very incestuous at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably one of the biggest reasons Eddie Murphy got in was probably because he was on SNL, even though mm-hmm. I don't think he was a huge part of that crew per mm-hmm. se. But, you know, Dan Aykroyd and Frank Oz and all those guys make sense for John Landis. It's Eddie Murphy who's kind of the standout from that.
A little bit, but
Even though he's the best part of the movie.
He sells the movie.
Of course.
If his character didn't work, you this movie would be crap.
Oh, yeah.
And Eddie Murphy did a great job.
So.
Okay, so let's talk about what you think about the story.
This is an incredibly relevant story.
For today, it is. There is a whole lot of racist shit in this movie. There really is, and a lot of class warfare going
yes.
on.
Mm-hmm. And they... So, number one, it is 1983. That mm-hmm. racism was prevalent regardless of whether or not they're commenting on it mm-hmm. and playing against it.
Yes.
It's still ever-present, and it's very blatant. I think people often equate racism to South, and I was like, oh, no, it's everywhere, and it's just different kinds.
Mm-hmm.
But
it just
yeah,
shows up differently.
On the one hand, props to them for not shying away from it. On the other hand, you know, it's very insensitive to any actual concerns that Eddie Murphy's character might have to it.
Well, I think that's the thing that shocked me. Of course, when I'm watching the TV edited version growing up, they dropped all the N-words.
Yes.
They're all in this film, and there's a lot of them.
Yep.
Not as much as a Quentin Tarantino film. But enough to make you go, whoa, they're not being stingy.
No.
It's not a one-off. There's several.
But in the scenes where it's used, here's the one thing. I don't think they use that word just to shock you.
No.
They use that word to make a point.
No, absolutely. I agree with that.
And it lands correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with all the class, and that's what gets me. Very, very few movies, any movies, are able to talk about class very well in mm-hmm. any specific way. This movie pulls it off.
Well, what's interesting is, okay, so you were talking about class, and I kept thinking about privilege, and that's what we've changed the conversation to.
In some references.
Yeah.
But, you know, privilege is a huge thing. But sometimes it could be a smokescreen for a really deep issue, which mm-hmm. is class and economics and socioeconomics there, which are an issue for everybody,
oh,
regardless.
Yes.
And that's, I think, where this movie actually touches on something very different.
Well, and what's interesting is the nature versus nurture argument that the brothers have posed by this experiment.
Correct.
You know, one is convinced that regardless of your upbringing, if you are given all of the tools and the finest things, that you will be a good person.
Yeah.
And another, and the other guy is like, no, you're either born with this or you're not. So that's why they take the super rich guy who's just born and bred, Ivy League finance guy, and they turn him into a poor man. And they take this con artist off the street and they turn him into this rich guy. And he actually starts to excel.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's interesting.
But I think at the end of the movie, it's like neither of those should have to be how it works, period.
Oh, sure. Yes.
That's the ultimate message they get to, which I think is great. There's also some really interesting stuff, and you touched on this mm-hmm. a little bit when we talked. There's interesting stuff about Wall Street and financing in this, and they give you a little bit of a primer on how trading works.
Yes. So the business that the Mortimers... Or they own a company called Dukes and Dukes.
Right.
They are stockbrokers.
Commodities traders. To be specific.
Okay, so they are trading commodities, and what happens is Eddie Murphy's character, Billy Ray Valentine, he figures out that he's just a pawn in their game, so he goes and finds Winthorpe, and is like, okay, let's get them back.
Mm-hmm.
Let's figure out what they're trying to do.
And by the way, if you've never seen this movie, you don't want it spoiled for you, we can end it here with, it's a great movie, you should see it,
uh-huh.
but we're going to give away the ending here to talk about this.
Because we want to talk about what they do.
And it's really fascinating.
It's great. So they figured out that there's somebody on the payroll who's getting a lot of money, but he's not an official employee.
Yep.
So they figure out who this guy is. Clarence Beeks, played by Paul Gleason.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really explain what his actual job is, but he is the person who is getting the official government crop report for orange juice concentrate.
Basically, they're insider trading using government information.
Exactly. Unless they paid this guy to get... The Dukes have paid these guys to get them this information before trading so they can corner the market.
Right. They want to launch the price mm-hmm. up and then sell off as they want to get it as high as they possibly can, then sell it all off and reap the profit mm-hmm. back. That's how trading works.
And what Valentine and Winthorpe do is they give them false information.
They steal the report.
They steal the report.
And give them the opposite.
So that they bankrupt the Dukes.
Duke and
the
Duke.
Duke and Duke, the Mortimers.
And this brilliant scene on the trading floor where as soon as it starts to get higher,
mm-hmm.
Dan Aykroyd says, hold off. It peaks up and then he goes, we're buying. Or he's like, we're selling. And starting a run on it. And then as soon as it goes down the tubes, they buy it back. So they know that as soon as the money goes back up, they can sell it off for an even bigger profit.
Okay, there's a great Planet Money article that explains this whole trading scenario if you need a little bit more specific information. But I'm going to read you the last little bullet point they've made. Winthorpe and Valentine have contracts allowing them to buy millions of pounds of orange juice in April for 29 cents a pound and then sell it for $1.42 a pound. They sold high and bought low. They are rich.
Yep.
And the Dukes made the opposite bet, and they are now completely broke.
Yep.
That is basically what happened. Now, here's what gets really interesting. In 1983, getting this insider information was not illegal.
Yep.
It was perfectly fine to do this. That is now illegal. Trading commodities on inside information obtained from the government wasn't actually legal when the movie came out, but it's illegal now. It was banned in the 2010 Finance Overhaul Law under a special provision often referred to as the Eddie Murphy Rule.
Yep.
Which is pretty awesome that a movie helped influence a piece of legislation.
Yeah, I mean, it does happen a lot, though. The cultural significance with it is there were many, many people who didn't understand how this worked, and I'm sure there were quite a few people with some little bit of influence who saw the movie and went, wait, they're allowed to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And then began the process of lobbying to get this overturned. Trading is such a fickle market,
mm-hmm.
and these things happen all too often where it's so easy to get insider trading. And mm-hmm. up until recently, it was incredibly easy to game the system.
Yeah.
So... This movie lays plain just how easy it can be and could be at times to just rip somebody a new one on mm-hmm. the floor, on the trading floor.
Yeah. So we'll link to that article. Again, that's Planet Money.
Yeah.
From NPR. They're awesome.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Though I do think the rule should be referred to as the Billy Ray Valentine Rule.
It's a much better name for it.
It is than Eddie Murphy, because, you know, Eddie Murphy can mean many things.
Or the Winthorpe and Valentine Rule.
Yeah, Winthorpe Valentine.
The movie hits everything perfectly. It makes its points perfectly, and they did their research.
Yes,
that's the coolest thing about it.
It's an intelligent movie.
Oh yeah, incredibly smart,
and it completely holds up today.
Mm-hmm.
Because while
I kept watching this, going, you could easily remake this now. You'd have to have different.
Please don't.
You'd have no, but I mean,
nobody remake this movie.
But you could if you transpose the. Trading or whatever, mm-hmm. you could do it.
Yes.
Theoretically.
Because ultimately it's insider trading.
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter who it came from. But yeah, it's so good. So, what's your rating? Oh, wait, it's my movie. I have to rate it first, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to do 4 or 5.
Whoa.
I love this movie for as long as I can remember. It still 100% holds up. And I mean, the only reason it's probably not getting a 5 for me is because I don't feel like it's a masterpiece.
I'm going to give it a 4 okay. for that specific reason. Here's what I will say.
It's the highest we've rated any movie at the same time.
It's really good. What I will say is this is 2 hours, and there are moments that they let move on a little too long.
True.
The movie does drag at points.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, that's the 80s and pacing and whatever. But there's some bits that they let go on just a little too long
mm-hmm.
that have already played themselves out for the humor.
That's fair.
So that's really the only thing. I feel like you could get this down to a tight hour and a half and be A-okay.
That's probably true.
Yeah. Mainly from cuts of just scenes that go on too long. That's all it
is.
Yeah,
some of the stuff with Winthorpe's girlfriend, he has a girlfriend who's a yuppie too. They probably could have cut most of that out.
I don't know. It's pretty good. It's very reflective of that era.
True, but some of the country club stuff they could have gotten rid of.
Well, you know.
They didn't have to have it be quite as long.
So, but 4 stars. It's up there. It's still a classic.
4.5. That's great. Mm-hmm. So that's the highest movie we've rated, period.
I know. I gotta beat that.
Damn. Okay, do you think you're gonna beat it with our next movie, Taxi Driver?
Well, I don't know. I think I will. I don't know if I'll beat it, but I think we can get up there with it.
Because I'm not too surprised at your rating on Trading Spaces. I have continued to call this movie Trading Spaces, which is an HGTV show.
The
that
original...
I was obsessed with for a very long time in college. But...
Wasn't it like TLC before that or something?
TLC is the network.
Yeah.
The show is Trading Spaces.
No, I know, but you said it was an HGTV show, and I think it was a TLC show.
Oh, you're right.
That's what I meant.
That's what I get. Because HGTV didn't exist then.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Whatever, they're all merged.
But yeah, no. Funny part was you kept saying Trading Spaces, and I was like, I'll watch Trading Spaces, for real. That was a great show.
That'd be a really good show to, like... make fun of.
Oh, so my gosh.
I think that show gives me anxiety now. Like, I can't let somebody do my house without me knowing what they're doing.
Taxi Driver. I mean, De Niro, one of maybe his two best performances.
And that's the one with Jodie Foster, right?
It's got Jodie Foster, who's a revelation at about 13.
Mm-hmm.
Some minor character roles of very recognizable people that you'll see. But mostly, this is a... I don't know where to start with it.
Okay, well, we'll save that for next time.
It's a revenge story.
Hmm.
About the common man.
Well, I'm really glad that you like this one.
That was good.
Yeah, when it's good, we don't have as much to say, because there's not as much to pick apart.
I know, right?
Yeah. It's almost better when we hate things. All right, well, maybe I'll hate Taxi Driver, and we'll have lots to discuss.
We might, if that happens.
All right, next time, guys.
Bye.
Right, this weekend we finally made it out to the Alamo for like the first time in forever, and we saw The Foreigner.
A humble businessman with a buried past seeks justice when his daughter is killed in an act of terrorism. A cat and mouse conflict ensues with a government official whose past may hold clues to the killer's identities.
Stars Jackie Chan and Pierce Brosnan.
Feels like a Jackie Chan movie.
It's not a Jackie Chan. Like, usually when you think Jackie Chan, you're like, oh, it's a lot of kung fu, a little bit, you know, a lot of martial arts stuff, some funny tricks, couple jokes. That's Jackie Chan.
Sort of. Some of the Hong Kong movies are a little more, I mean, if you're thinking like Police Story or Rumble in the Bronx or something like that, before he got into the Shanghai Nights Rush Hour phase.
Shanghai Nights is great.
Shanghai Noon first.
Shanghai Noon and the Shanghai Nights. Those movies were adorable.
Also, Rush Hour is extremely my shit. That movie was awesome.
Oh, I didn't see that one in the theater, but I remember it was playing. It was probably, you know, at some daycare thing I went to, and it was fun. Movies are fun.
We were Jackie Chan fans.
And Jackie Chan is adorable.
But also, like, some of his Hong Kong movies are definitely more thrillers, but they also did have... He was always the hero. Mm-hmm. He was a pure hero, even if he was being framed for something.
So in this movie, it's more of a serious role for Jackie Chan, so you don't get his hijinks that we've come to love and adore.
No.
And then Pierce Brosnan is Irish. He used to be Irish in this movie, which is kind of fun. And very non-James Bond-like.
Yes. He is actually Irish.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
I did know that, but we rarely hear it.
I guess there's like two big things for me that were actually really interesting about this movie. One, they actually got the Irish conflict like dead on. And it might be the director, Martin Campbell.
There's a lot of information about the IRA.
Yes.
And they're a part of the central conflict.
Yeah. I mean,
we don't want to give anything away.
No. But I just know, like, in other movies and in other things, they really play this hard black and white edge of the IRA, and this movie does a really good job of telling how blurry those lines are. Like, it really gets into that in an interesting way.
Yeah, and then there's a bunch of side actors, or background actors.
People you might recognize. There's a couple of Game of Thrones people we totally picked up on.
Yeah, the first, the big one is Michael McElhattan. I can't do that. I cannot do an Irish accent. not even close. I'm not going to embarrass myself. So that gentleman, I remember we were sitting in theater and I was like, I know that guy. Why do I know that guy? And then I was like, oh, he's from Game of Thrones. And then it was, who is he in Game of Thrones? Because there's 1,000 old English-sounding dudes in Game of Thrones. And I was like, oh, he's Roose Bolton.
Yep.
He's Roose Bolton. He's pretty great.
That was the only one, I think. Everybody else is just an Irish actor.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing that I think is really worth picking up in this movie, the fight scenes are actually really interesting. Because normally with a Jackie Chan movie, you would see the kung fu sequence where they're pushing those limits of physics, though it's always meant to be realistic. So a guy gets kicked into a wall, but you kind of sort of believe that might actually happen. It's not Crouching Tiger level crazy. It's more like, oh, this guy got kicked and the force threw him into the wall.
This feels more practical.
And here's what's cool. Everybody on the bad guy's side are fighting in the technique they would normally fight in. Normally with the kung fu, with a movie like this, Jackie Chan would be fighting against a bunch of white guys that also know karate, kung fu somehow. They didn't do that.
Okay.
If you're watching the other guys, they're just fighting using whatever street technique they know. It's kind of military and conventional.
That's fair.
And then he parries
it. He does his thing.
Using his thing, which made it all the more, it worked all the more better for me. Like, I loved those fight scenes because they played it that way. And it just makes it feel more real. You're like, none of these guys would like know kung fu off the top of their heads to go after this guy.
Yeah, I can see that.
You didn't make any difference for you?
Not really.
Yeah.
I just really felt like it wasn't doing the stereotypical, like, overextending the fight scene. Like, they didn't make them longer than they needed to.
Yeah.
They didn't make it a little too ridiculous with, you know, the extra props and stuff that you usually see with Jackie Chan. So they're very tight. It's a quick movie.
Yeah.
It's a good popcorn movie.
And it's competently made. I also forget, so the guy who made this, Martin Campbell, Mask of Zorro.
Oh, okay.
GoldenEye.
Uh-huh.
And Casino Royale.
I love Casino Royale.
And the Zorro sequel.
No one cares about that.
No, both were good.
I love Casino Royale.
So he's worked with Pierce Brosnan, that's part of it. But he's also made some really good movies. He also made Green Lantern, which I'll forgive him for.
Everyone has a Green Lantern on their resume.
It was a terrible,
everybody movie. Agrees. Nobody thinks that movie is worth saving.
A movie in which the nerd is the bad guy.
I know. Just kind of bad there.
No, it's not good.
No, in the most recent Batman vs. Superman, Lex Luthor is also a nerd who's the bad guy.
Yeah, true. But he's also kind of a nihilist. Creepy weirdo.
Whatever. So if you need a good popcorn movie action thing, go see this one.
How many stars would you give it?
2.5.
I'll give it 3.
Okay.
It does exactly what it's supposed to do. It's good, and it's got enough interesting stuff in it that...
It is interesting, and Jackie Chan is great in
It's more interesting than just your generic run thriller.
I'm still going to stand by my 2.3, because I'm not going to watch this movie again.
Nah, no.
And I'm not going to own it.
Though if I had basic cable and it came on, I wouldn't turn it off.
That's fair. That's a fair benchmark.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for this episode. Please take a moment to review and rate us on iTunes. And for questions and comments, drop us an email at macintosh@gmail.com.